Cowdersport to Elizabethtown, Lansford to Mount Pleasant. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, chants of Drain the Swamp echo throughout Donald Trump's campaign rallies. In his new book, Swamp Wars, author and national political commentator Jeff Lord details the ongoing battle between the swamp and America. He is here to talk about it. The state budget deadline is about a week away. Increased revenue is making budget talks less divisive than in past years. Frank Amrat and Eric Montardi break down the numbers on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And several bills aimed at easing re-entry into society for those who have served time in prison are advancing through the state legislature. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jeff Lord in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has vetoed a bill that would have provided more educational scholarships to low- and middle-income students through the state's popular Education Improvement Tax Credit. This despite the fact his own business has utilized the program in the past. The governor stifled efforts by the General Assembly to provide more scholarship assistance to students seeking alternatives to failing K-12 public schools. Expansion of the program was opposed by the State Teachers Union. The PSEA, by the way, was one of the largest contributors to Wolf's reelection campaign. Five state correction officers have filed a lawsuit with the assistance of the Fairness Center and the National Right to Work Foundation, seeking relief from the Pennsylvania State Correction Officers Association, which has refused to accept their resignations from the union. At issue are the officers' constitutional rights, as affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court last year in the Janus decision. The High Court ruled that workers cannot be forced into union membership as a condition of employment. Unions are seeking to subvert the ruling by limiting resignations to brief periods of time. The suit maintains such rights are unrestricted and members should be allowed to escape union membership at any point. The troubled Harrisburg School District is now under control of a state-appointed receiver. Acting on a request by the State Education Department, a Dauphin County judge ordered the takeover this past week. Dr. Janet Samuel will now assume most of the powers normally reserved for the school board. The move comes as the urban district struggles with a wide range of financial and education issues. Recently, the elected school board refused to submit to a state audit, resulting in the revocation of grant money. That, among other issues, prompted the takeover request. The district has been in and out of state oversight for decades. Little progress has been made toward solving its problems. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Swamp Wars is the title of Jeff Lord's latest book. As a former CNN commentator who was a victim of the left's attack on those who oppose it, he offers a firsthand account of the battle between real America and the media government swamp. Jeff also writes frequently for the American Spectator, and he is a proud Pennsylvanian. Jeff, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jeff, you have your latest book out. It's called Swamp Wars. We've all heard the term swamp, but tell us what you mean by swamp wars.
Well, in 1964, if you'll recall, actor Ronald Reagan made his debut on national television with a speech for Barry Goldwater. And in that speech, he talked about who was going to run our lives. He says, are we going to be governed by a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital? Well, what he was really talking about there was what has become known as the swamp. And my point is that swamps today, Washington, D.C. is without doubt the capital of the swamp, but swamps today are all around the country and for that matter around the world. And they are composed of a group of intellectual elites who see themselves as intellectually and morally superior to the average American, particularly to President Trump and most particularly to his supporters. And so these swamp wars break out all the time. The number one swamp war is, of course, targeting the president. And they want to impeach him. They want this. They want to investigate him. They want this, that, and the other thing. But around the country, it could be Hollywood. It could be the media in general. It could be academia. when you see somebody like, say, Ben Shapiro show up to give a speech and they've got to call out the National Guard or the local police and all of this sort of thing to protect him. I think at Berkeley it cost the college something like $600,000 for security. I myself gave a talk. It was invited by the college Republicans at Franklin and Marshall, where I am an alum, to give a talk. And we had about 200 kids show up. And I was no sooner out of the car than I was given not one, not two, not three, but four security guards.
Oh, gee.
Who were positioned in various places in the auditorium and close to me while I gave my talk and took questions and answers. And then when it was done, they escorted me out and to the car. Well, you know, you're just saying to yourself, what is going on here with all of this?
Well, Jeff, what is going on here with all of this? I mean, let's face it. Every president has folks who intensely dislike him.
Right.
Regardless of what president and what period of time, it's always been a blood sport. This, however, at least in the modern era, what is it about the left that makes their hatred of this president, this president's policies, this president's supporters so visceral?
Well, I've written about this in the book, and I date this to the confirmation of Robert Bork.
Mm-hmm.
When I was then a young White House aide in the White House political office, the Reagan White House political office. And there was this furious battle which Bork lost and which I have to say the Reagan White House was not prepared for, because Supreme Court nominations previous to that were gentlemanly, scholarly, polite affairs, sort of abstruse and listening to legal theory and all this. And this was a pitch battle. It was the first time television commercials had been run against a Supreme Court nominee. And in this case, it was with the inimitable voice of the actor Gregory Peck warning about the dangers of Robert Bork. Robert Bork himself later wrote that this was a battle about more than a single judge. He says that the reason for the vociferousness of this and the viciousness was this was about not just political control but cultural control of the country, and that they saw Robert Bork as a threat to that control. And I would suggest that they look at Donald Trump and his supporters as a threat to their control of American culture. And the irony, of course, is that Donald Trump came out of media culture, you know, with his television shows. I mean, he like Ronald Reagan was very much a creature of this, and so they utterly detest him, and particularly his supporters. And this really is what this is all about. And in the book, I have a quote from a Washington Post story, as this was slowly beginning to dawn on journalists, mainstream journalists in 2016. And they talked to a woman whose name I believe was Kathy Culbertson, something like that. She was from Ohio, had retired to North Carolina. When she was in Ohio, she worked at an unnamed university. And she goes on at length in this article and says, we couldn't say Merry Christmas. We couldn't use he and she or him and her as pronouns.
Yeah.
She goes through this whole list of things and she says everybody was on walking on eggs because people would say they'd been insulted. And she said – and then she paused and said, but no one worried about insulting me. And that explained why they found her at a Trump rally in North Carolina and was a thoroughgoing Trump supporter. And I think right there you've got this. That I mean, even Bill Maher, whose show I've now been on twice, has said that liberals had better get wise to the fact that political correctness is damaging them.
Well, it really is. We are talking with Jeff Lord, and Jeff is author of the new book, Swamp Wars, and we'll discuss in a couple of minutes where you can go to get a copy of it. But Jeff, you were perhaps the earliest person in the media to really identify Donald Trump as someone who could be the leader of this movement. As you just pointed out, he was in the media, so most people didn't expect that that person could become the leader of a populist movement.
Right.
You early on identified him as that, wrote at least one book on the subject. What was it back in 2014, 2015, early 2016 that you saw in Donald Trump that caused you to think that he would become what it is he has become?
I wrote my first column, Never Ignore Donald Trump, in June of 2013 in the American Spectator. And the point I was making was that he had right before then been on Fox and Friends. And he was saying somebody needs to come along, whether it's me or someone else, and straighten out this country. And I said, you know, not only yes, but H yes. And I said in the Reagan White House, we had a slogan on the staff, let Reagan be Reagan. Mm-hmm. And I said, the answer here is let Trump be Trump. And that is more or less exactly what happened. I'm told that my friend Corey Lewandowski would later have exactly those words in this campaign war room in Trump Tower, let Trump be Trump. And that is exactly why he got elected, because he is the least politically correct person you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And in the style, I have most of my extended family is from New York, Eastern Long Island and upstate New York, et cetera. And as I well know, New Yorkers can be blunt.
Let's talk for a minute or two specifically about Pennsylvania. You, of course, are a Pennsylvanian. You live in South Central Pennsylvania, very familiar with the terrain, having been in the Reagan White House. You're familiar with politics. Donald Trump won Pennsylvania narrowly, but he won it in what was considered to be a major upset in 2016. Do you see the landscape as being similar? Has anything changed? And can he do it again?
Yes, I absolutely think he can do it again. And as you know, Loman, because we were sort of coming up at the same time in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. politics. I worked in the state Senate and then for Congressman Bud Schuster, mm-hmm. Senator John Hines, Drew Lewis. So I spent a lot of time crisscrossing Pennsylvania and got to know the state fairly well. And one of the things that I always remember is in 1976, as a young aide to the then state chairman, Dick Frame, who was also the mm-hmm. Senate Republican leader, I went to the Republican convention in Kansas City for what became the famous Ford-Reagan showdown. And all of our elders that you would remember in the Pennsylvania Republican Party at the time were explaining to me ever so gently why we had to support Gerald Ford. And the answer was, he can carry Pennsylvania. Ronald Reagan is way too conservative. He can't do it. Well, what did I know? I listened to their wisdom. And of course, we got to the fall and Gerald Ford not only lost Pennsylvania, he lost the whole election. 4 years later, they were back saying the same thing of George Herbert Walker Bush. Reagan, of course, won and then, to their shock, carried Pennsylvania, not once but twice. And then with Bush campaigning on his record as Reagan's VP, he won Pennsylvania. Then he sort of veered off in a moderate direction and no Republican since carried it. And I kept thinking Donald Trump is the person who can unlock Pennsylvania here and get back to the sort of Reagan-style victories.
It's interesting that you point that out because Pennsylvania is viewed as a moderate or had historically been viewed as a moderate Republican state, yet moderate Republicans are not winning in Pennsylvania. No. Even if you look at our U.S. Senators, Pat Toomey, he's conservative.
Right.
Donald Trump won. He's conservative. The moderates don't appear to do well. Any thoughts on why that is?
Yeah, I think it's because it's sort of a Me Too situation, mm-hmm. As they used to call them. I remember someone we both knew well, Arlen Specter, mm-hmm. specifically telling me that Pat Toomey could never be elected because he was too conservative. And when you look at the county by county map of the Pennsylvania 67 counties in 2016, it's a sea of red.
It is. You know, it really is.
It's only the suburban counties, interestingly, where moderate Republicans kept trying to appeal, where Hillary Clinton carried. She carried Philadelphia, but not well, not by any spectacular amount. And much has been made. There's a book by Ben Bradley Jr. sort of plunged into the details of Luzerne County and to understand why it voted for Trump. And again, I think this stems directly from his blue collar background. You know, he's been described as the blue collar billionaire. Mm-hmm. And I think that appeal is tremendous. I gave a talk a while back in York County, and before I went, I looked up the stats from 2016. He got 63% of the vote in York County.
He did well. And as you pointed out, Luzerne County carried Erie County, which hadn't been done before. We might also point out that last year, moderate legislative Republicans in the suburban Philadelphia area got wiped out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a tidal wave. So interesting stuff. We have been talking with Jeff Lord, who is author of the new book, Swamp Wars. And Jeff, I'm sure many of our listeners are going to want to read this book. So where can they find it?
You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find it in your local Barnes & Noble bookstore. And I hope you do.
Amazon.com. The book, again, is Swamp Wars. We've been talking with author Jeff Lord. Jeff, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Loman.
The Trump economy has resulted in a significant increase in state tax revenue, and that is making this year's state budget process a bit easier than it has been in the recent past. Here with details are Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, let's get into some talk about the state budget. The fiscal year for 2018-19 is about to wrap up, and then the new fiscal year will be starting July 1. Mm-hmm. There's been various rumblings outside of Harrisburg, you know, as to what's going on, how smooth the budget process will be. We know last year it came in, it was approved well before the start of the fiscal year with not a lot of problems, but of course that was an election year.
An election year cures all those budget issues.
Sure does. So this year nobody is running, no gubernatorial election, no state house, no state senate elections. 2020 will be a different story.
Right.
But let's look back at where we are now, because you have some numbers in a new brief that will be available on our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. And you looked at the what you have up till now with the fiscal year that we're currently in through April. We don't want to think back to the cold and rainy weather then, but we're still dealing with rainy weather now. But let's look at what's going on or what went on with the general fund. Now, the general fund is the biggest fund that the state has in its budget. Tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on from July until this past April.
Absolutely. I mean, the reason we looked at this, of course, is the budget season's in full swing, and it's betting man, I'm not sure we'll get it done by the end of June, but you never know. But we're looking at the general fund revenues, and that, of course, is how much money they can spend on general fund expenditures. And the trend, now, of course, the Department of Revenue only has data through April of this fiscal year, so just 10 months of the fiscal year. So that's kind of where we're going from. How did this fiscal year through April compare to fiscal 18 through April? And what we found was a little interesting in as much as the total general fund was only up like 0.5% over this time last year. But yet it was 2.9% higher than anticipated. So it was kind of an odd thing that they actually expected the general fund revenues to go down. And the reason that was the case is back in fiscal 2018, they had a little miscellaneous addition to revenues. They sold off $1.5 billion worth of revenue bonds against the tobacco settlement. And then they also had another $300 million in leases to the farm complex and a few other things. So basically, they were $1.8 billion higher than normal in fiscal 18. So fiscal 19, they were a little more temperate in their projections. But it did come in a little higher than what was this time last year without that extra little bump. Now, the thing that makes this general fund budget tick, of course, are the three main tax categories. The miscellaneous was, of course, a non-tax category. The largest tax category in the general fund budget, of course, is the personal income tax. The personal income tax is up 5.5% through April of 19 versus through April of 18. And so that's a pretty healthy increase. And then, of course, represents, I think, a little more healthy incomes for people. And then you look at what happened prior to that. When you look at the fiscal years from 13 through 14, up through this 16-17 time frame, there wasn't much movement in personal income tax. They really didn't go up too much. It wasn't until you got to fiscal 17, fiscal 18 that you started seeing the increases in the personal income tax. And I think that speaks more to the national economy, the growth of the national economy bleeding over to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, okay. So that's the biggest one out of the general fund is personal income tax. And let's talk about the second biggest one, which would be the sales and use tax.
Right. Like,
what's the trend going on there?
What's interesting about the sales and use tax, of course, is that you had, again, a nice little jump in the last 2 years, much better than the previous jump. From fiscal 18 through fiscal 19 year to date, we're up about 7.5%. Prior to that, the previous 17 to 18 was up 4.5%. But again, those 3 years of 14 through 17, not much was going on. In total, it was only up 4.7% over 3 years. So you didn't have a whole lot of movement. And again, confidence in the economy. People have better incomes, higher incomes. They go out and spend. They go out and spend because they're not worried about, you know, looking over their shoulder to see if their job's going to be eliminated. So again, I think this has a lot to do with the national economy. And again, another positive sign that, you know, that things are growing and improving. And of course, the final one is the corporate net income tax. And that's where we really see a marked increase from this time in the last fiscal year to fiscal 19, up 22.4%. And that's pretty huge. Now, it's just the third largest. It's only worth about $2.5 billion to date, but it's still a substantial sign that the economy's getting better and that businesses are picking up, and hopefully that would then translate into better job numbers for the economy as a whole.
And what a segue. So now we're going to talk about the other part of the brief. So you have what's going on with the state general fund revenues. What has happened with non-farm employment in the last year? So again, looking at where we were in April of 2019 back to April of 2018.
Mm. Well, non-farm jobs across the Commonwealth had their fourth highest monthly total in April of 2019. Over 6 million jobs in that month. And of course, the three higher months were all in the fourth quarter of 2018. October, November, December were all well over 6 million jobs. So it was a pretty good last handful of months of 2018. And here in April 2019, it's moved along as well. However, it's only less than a 1% increase. It's 0.9% increase from April 18 to April 19. So in 1 year, the Pennsylvania economy didn't grow that much, at least as far as total non-farm jobs are concerned. Contrast that with the national level, when total non-farm jobs across the nation were up by 1.7%. So the nation's still outpacing Pennsylvania, probably about twice the rate. And so you start to see this, the increase in the incomes, the increase in general fund revenue, but it's not translating into jobs as of yet. So when you look at the Pennsylvania economy and the jobs in particular, you're not really seeing the growth. But at the same time, we've not really seen any policies out there that are encouraging growth. We still see a fealty to unions. We still see high regulations. We still see any business out there that has any kind of success, like Marcellus Shale, we want to tax the heck out of it to get more money. So you're not seeing businesses being encouraged at the state level to see any kind of decent job growth. Meanwhile, nationally, you are seeing it. So there's definitely a disconnect between what we're seeing in the general fund and what we're seeing in jobs growth. And we're not really sure exactly when the two will catch up, if at all.
If the two shall ever meet, Frank, we will be the first to report it, I'm sure, right here on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Although the state budget currently occupies center stage in Harrisburg, a wide range of other issues, including significant additional reforms to our criminal justice system, are being debated. Adam McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
This month, I had the opportunity to testify before the Pennsylvania House of Representatives Judiciary Committee to support a package of bills that will support the successful implementation of reforms to our probation and parole system, as well as better providing for the restoration of victims of crime. With the second highest percentage of its citizens on probation and parole in the country and the highest incarceration rate in the Northeast, the Keystone State cannot delay these reforms. We believe that every person has the ability to do extraordinary things. However, to the detriment of the person, their community, and society as a whole, some individuals have barriers in their lives that keep them from realizing their full potential. When people make poor choices, they should own up to them and pay the fine or do the time. However, we should not make it more difficult for them to move on with their lives. A key part of reducing Pennsylvania's over-incarceration epidemic is ensuring that our parole and probation system are more effective at setting our citizens up for successful reentry. In 2016, over half of state prison admissions were for probation and parole revocations, as opposed to new crimes. That's an appalling failure rate. Pennsylvania needs to critically evaluate how it spends its community corrections resources and better tailor its parole and probation policies to provide maximum support to those at highest risk of recidivism who need the most support to achieve the maximum effectiveness from the limited resources available. The reforms in this package are an important step in that direction. Senate Bill 501 will make Pennsylvania's community supervision system more effective by expanding the use of risk and needs assessments to better individualize the supervision and resources directed toward individual parolees and probationers. Not everyone on probation or parole needs the same level of supervision, particularly at different points in the process. Our communities are safer and our taxpayers are better off when parole and probation officers can concentrate on those in need of the greatest supervision to successfully complete their supervision. Senate Bill 500 creates the County Adult Probation and Parole Advisory Committee, which will oversee grants to implement probation and parole reforms. The advisory committee that SB 500 creates will issue grants to help counties implement holistic community supervision programs to serve the more than 250,000 Pennsylvanians on parole or probation. The advisory committee will assist counties in developing funding formulas and program plans to effectively implement the reforms of Senate Bill 501. The committee will also place a higher grant priority towards counties with larger numbers of high-risk and needs individuals, in addition to helping implement effective community supervision reforms. Senate Bill 502 expands services to help ensure victims of crime are supported and made whole, something Americans for Prosperity recognizes is an important component of the effective criminal justice system. The bill increases the time period a crime victim can file for compensation from 2 to 3 years and clarifies eligibility rules so that victims can apply as long as they report crimes within 72 hours of their discovery, not merely their commission. The bill also expands the scope of people affected by crime who can pursue compensation, such as those who lose financial support due to the death of another crime victim, to apply. A well-functioning criminal justice system should restore those who have been wronged by crime. It should also give the 95% of those serving sentences who will return to society the best possible opportunities to rehabilitate themselves, contribute to their communities, and reach their full potential. By tackling probation, parole, and victims' restoration, Senate Bills 500, 501, and 502 comprise a comprehensive component of the essential continuation of Pennsylvania's justice reinvestment efforts. This package was passed unanimously in the Senate, as well as the initial Justice Reinvestment Initiative package of bills 6 years ago. Good policy reforms like this should be bipartisan, as well as supported by organizations all across the political spectrum. You can find more information about this important package of bills on Twitter, at AFP Pennsylvania, facebook.com/fightback, and on our website at americansforprosperity.org. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIOO-FM, WHYL-FM, and Red 102.3-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.